Welcome to the OCR GCSE English Language Revision Podcast. I'm your study guide tutor, and today we're diving deep into one of the most rewarding skills you can master for your exam, identifying bias and understanding context in nonfiction texts. This is topic 1.12, and it sits right at the heart of component 01. Whether you're sitting foundation or higher tier, this skill will unlock marks across multiple assessment objectives. So settle in, grab your revision notes, and let's get started. Before we jump into the content, let me tell you why this topic matters so much. In your OCR English language exam, you'll be reading unseen nonfiction texts, articles, opinion pieces, speeches, letters, reports. The writers of these texts are not neutral. They have a point of view, an agenda, a purpose. Your job as a candidate is to see through the surface of the text and identify how the writer is shaping your response. That's what identifying bias in context is all about. And when you can do that confidently, you're working at the very top of the mark scheme. Let's start with the absolute foundation, the difference between fact and opinion. A fact is a statement that can be verified. It can be proven true or false through evidence, data, or observable events. An opinion is a statement based on belief, feeling, or judgment. It cannot be proven true or false. Now that sounds simple, doesn't it? But here's where candidates lose marks. They assume that any statement containing a number is automatically a fact, or they label something as an opinion without identifying the specific linguistic evidence that tells them so. The examiner wants precision. You need to point to the actual words. Here's a quick test I call the verifiability test. Ask yourself, could this statement appear in a scientific report or official record without anyone challenging it? If yes, it's likely a fact. If the statement contains value judgments, words like shocking, outrageous, clearly, obviously, must, should, then it's an opinion, or at the very least, it's opinion dressed up as fact. And that second category, opinion disguised as fact, is where the really interesting analysis happens. Let me give you an example. Compare these two sentences. Sentence 1, 42% of young people reported feeling anxious about their future. Sentence 2, the shocking truth is that nearly half of all young people are clearly suffering from a crisis of confidence. Now, both sentences are drawing on similar data, but sentence 2 is saturated with bias. The emotive adjective shocking frames the statistic as alarming before the reader has even processed it. The intensifying adverb clearly presents the writer's interpretation as if it were self-evident. The noun phrase crisis of confidence is a dramatic, loaded construction that goes far beyond what the data actually says. This is a writer manipulating the boundary between fact and opinion. And in your AO4 evaluation questions, identifying and analyzing this manipulation is exactly what earns you the highest marks. Now let's talk about the linguistic markers you need to know. I want you to think of these as your bias detection toolkit. The first category is modal verbs. Words like must, should, ought to, could, and might signal degrees of certainty or obligation. When a writer says, the government must act now, they're not stating a fact. They're expressing a strong opinion about what should happen. The modal verb must signals urgency and obligation, and it reveals the writer's bias. The second category is emotive adjectives. These are words designed to trigger an emotional response. Devastating, outrageous, remarkable, appalling, inspiring. When you spot one of these, ask yourself, why did the writer choose this particular word? What emotional response are they trying to provoke? The third category is intensifying adverbs. Clearly, obviously, undeniably, simply. These words present the writer's opinion as if it were a self-evident truth that no reasonable person could question. They're a rhetorical trick. By saying clearly, the writer is trying to make you feel that disagreeing would be unreasonable. The fourth category is hedging language. Perhaps, it seems, arguably, some might say, these soften a claim and make the writer appear balanced and fair-minded even when they're actually steering you towards a particular conclusion. The fifth category is rhetorical questions. How can we allow this to continue? Doesn't actually ask for an answer. It implies that the situation is so obviously wrong that no decent person could defend it. And the sixth category, which candidates often overlook, is statistical framing. Numbers can be presented in ways that are deeply biased. As many as 9 out of 10 sounds alarming. Only 9 out of 10 sounds reassuring. The statistic is identical, the framing is entirely different. Always look at the language surrounding a statistic, not just the number itself. Now I want to talk about context, because bias never exists in a vacuum. Context means the circumstances in which a text was produced, who wrote it, when, for what publication, for what audience, and with what purpose. Understanding context helps you explain why a writer holds a particular bias. A newspaper article written by a political commentator for a right-leaning broadsheet will have a very different perspective on immigration policy than an article written by a charity worker for a humanitarian magazine. Neither is necessarily lying, but both are presenting a partial view shaped by their context. In your AO4 evaluation questions, the highest level responses don't just identify that a writer is biased, they explain how the context shapes and explains that bias. Let me walk you through the PEEL framework for structuring your analysis responses. PEEL stands for Point, Evidence, Analysis, Link. Your point is your analytical claim. For example, the writer uses emotive language to present her opinion as an established fact. Your evidence is a short, precisely selected quotation embedded within your sentence, not a block quote, but a few key words woven into your own writing. Your analysis is where you earn the marks. You name the technique, explain the effect on the reader, and crucially, you explain why the writer has made this choice, and your link connects your analysis back to the question focus, bias, context, persuasion, or whatever the question asks about. One developed PEEL paragraph is worth far more than three surface-level observations. Depth beats breadth every time. Now let's move into exam tips and common mistakes, because this is where many candidates drop marks unnecessarily. Common mistake number one, confusing a character's or interviewee's opinion with the writer's own perspective. If a newspaper article quotes a politician saying, "This policy is a disaster," that is the politician's opinion, not the journalist's. The journalist may be using that quote strategically to support their own argument or to present a range of views, but you must distinguish between the voice of the writer and the voices they include. Marks are specifically withheld for candidates who conflate these. Common mistake number two, labeling a statement as a fact simply because it contains a number. Statistics can be deeply biased. The phrase, as many as 40%, uses the same data as only 40%, but creates a completely different impression. Always examine the language surrounding any statistic. Common mistake number three, asserting that something is an opinion without identifying the specific linguistic evidence. The examiner needs to see that you can point to the actual words, the modal verb, the emotive adjective, the intensifying adverb, that signal opinion. Without that linguistic evidence, your answer is assertion, not analysis. Common mistake number four, failing to evaluate why a writer presents an opinion as a fact. This is the sophisticated move that separates level three from level four responses. A writer might present an opinion as a fact in order to silence opposition. If something is presented as self-evidently true, it becomes harder to argue against. They might do it to establish authority, to appear objective, or to make their argument seem more credible. When you can explain the purpose behind the technique, you're demonstrating the kind of critical thinking that the mark scheme rewards most generously. One more tip for your evaluation questions. Use the phrase "to some extent" when you're asked whether a writer is successful or convincing. This signals to the examiner that you're going to offer a balanced, evaluative response rather than simply agreeing or disagreeing. Then build your argument. Explain where the writer's use of bias and context is effective, and where it might be less convincing or even counterproductive. For example, where the bias is so obvious that it undermines the writer's credibility. Now let's do a quick-fire recall quiz. I'll ask five questions, pause the audio after each one, and try to answer before I give you the answer. Question one, what is the verifiability test? Pause now. The answer, ask whether the statement can be proven true or false. If it cannot, treat it as opinion. Question two. Name three linguistic markers of bias. Pause now. Any three from modal verbs, emotive adjectives, intensifying adverbs, hedging language, rhetorical questions, statistical framing. Question three. What does PEEL stand for? Pause now. Point, evidence, analysis, link. Question four. Why might a writer present an opinion as if it were a fact? Pause now. To silence opposition, establish authority, appear objective, or make their argument seem more credible. Question five. What is the difference between a writer's own perspective and a quoted source's perspective? Pause now. a quoted source's opinion belongs to the person being quoted, not necessarily to the writer. The writer chooses to include that quote strategically, and you must analyze that choice. How did you do? If you got all five, you're in great shape. If you struggled with any of them, go back and reread the relevant section of your study guide. Let me leave you with a summary of the key takeaways from today's episode. First, always apply the verifiability test. Can the statement be proven true or false? Second, use your bias detection toolkit, modal verbs, emotive adjectives, intensifying adverbs, hedging language, rhetorical questions, and statistical framing. Third, context shapes bias. Always explain why a writer holds the perspective they do, not just what that perspective is. Fourth, use the PEEL framework for every analysis paragraph: point, evidence, analysis, link. Fifth, the most rewarding analysis explains the purpose behind the technique, not just what the technique is. You've got this. The skills we've covered today are transferable across every nonfiction text you'll ever read in your exam. The more you practice spotting these linguistic markers, the more automatic it becomes, and that's when you start performing at the very top of the mark scheme. Good luck with your revision, and I'll see you in the next episode.